Welcome to The Point. I'm Indy Todd. Our country is a mix of races, ethnicities, religions, and cultures, yet most books published in the U.S. for children and young adults feature white protagonists. Why don't our books reflect the reality of our nation? Why is it important that children see themselves in books they read? And what can we do to encourage more diversity in the books reaching our children's bookshelves? With us this hour to talk about the importance of diversity in children's books is Mary Cronin, director of the Early Childhood Career Pathways Grant at Cape Cod Community College. She also teaches English and early childhood education at the college. Good morning, Mary.
Nice to be here, Mindy. Thank you.
Jennifer Weston is director of the Wampanoag Language Reclamation Project. Good morning, Jennifer.
Good morning. Kui Klassen.
And Sarah Hines, the co-owner of the independent bookstore Eight Cousins in Falmouth. Good morning, Sarah.
Morning.
So diversity can mean a number of things. Mary, aside from skin color, what do we mean when we talk about diversity this hour?
Diversity can mean a whole lot of different aspects of being a human, from race and ethnicity to skin color to any aspect of culture, socioeconomic status, LGBTQ families and children. So there's a lot of different aspects to diversity we could possibly talk about today.
And Sarah, the Cooperative Children's Book Center at the University of Wisconsin keeps a database on the numbers of diverse books published each year going back decades. Tell us more about what they track and the trends that we're seeing.
Well, they track a lot of different things about children's books, so it's a really great institution. And but what they've been doing the last few years is publishing statistics on diversity in children's books, as well as graphics. And they tend to specify in the graphics they've been putting out, they tend to really focus in on race and culture, but they do research the wide range that Mary mentioned.
And Jennifer, tell us more about your work at the Wampanoag Language Reclamation Project.
Sure. So our project was founded by linguist Jesse Little Doe Baird and elder Helen Manning from the Aquinnah Wampanoag, and the original goal was to return Wampanoag language to households. Today, we are operating an immersion school in Wampanoag, but for our kindergarten students, we do offer English language instruction in case they decide to transition into public schools. And we've also built a wonderful partnership with Mashpee Public Schools, where we are partnering to introduce Native authored books and films into the K-12 curriculum for the benefit of all students.
Jennifer, stories are integral into learning a language. How many, if any, Wampanoag language texts were there when you began this project, and how has that changed over the years?
So it's really the type of texts that have changed over the centuries. Wampanoag ancestors were the first American Indians to adapt the Roman alphabet and to begin writing. So everything from letters, wills, and deeds, and then there are really well-known collaborations with missionaries like John Eliot that produced some of the first printed religious texts here in North America. They were printed in Wampanoag language, and it was things like the King James Bible or an Indian grammar begun. There were different texts that were primarily produced around religious topics. And the idea was conversion for Native communities. But today, Jesse has trained a whole generation of young women who are now Wampanoag language teachers. And so those young women and Jesse and her family herself actually write books for us in Wampanoag. And sometimes those are family stories. Sometimes they are traditional tribal stories. And the idea is that we're focusing on teaching students in our school to understand and to read those stories in a bilingual setting. So they're reading them in both Wampanoag and in English.
So Jennifer, how challenging has it been to find books that feature Indigenous protagonists? And do you find that some of those books perpetuate stereotypes?
We have a really savvy team of educators, and we're also fortunate to work with an entire constellation of Native language schools and programs throughout Indian country. So we've benefited from reading lists from some of our funders and partners, like the First Nations Development Institute. They have a wonderful Native American children's literature list that goes all the way from preschool through high school study and appropriate texts for students that age. There's also a newer list that we've been looking at in the last year from the National Indian Education Association. Both these organizations have great websites, lots of programs, And we also are always discovering new Native authors on our social media. I started following an author named Tracy Sorrell, who is a Cherokee author, whose recent book, We Are Grateful, is actually published in both the Cherokee syllabary and in the English language. And she also has produced a whole range of authors from her community reading in both Cherokee and in English. So those are the kinds of projects we're really looking at through the Wampanoag Language Project, where our teachers become authors, but they're also, you know, the illustrators sometimes, and they're able to read and share those stories with children, not just in the Wampanoag community, but also at places like the Boston Public Library that's invited us to do some children's story hours for the last couple of years.
You bring up a good point there, because as you were saying this and saying that they're also written in English, I'm thinking it's important for all children. I mean, not, we're not talking just about indigenous populations to be reading these books, but for all children to be have access to these stories, right?
Absolutely. And the books that I'm talking about from, you know, these First Nation Development Institute and National Indian Education Association, their reading lists are focusing almost entirely on books that are written in English, but many of them are being produced in bilingual texts as well. And that's because our languages are endangered in Indian country. So we're using literacy and print materials as a way to preserve and revitalize languages. And that's something that's happening here in Wampanoag households too.
Yeah. Sarah, the Cooperative Children's Book Center tracks diverse authors and diverse protagonists. Why is it important to keep track of both of these statistics?
Well, I noticed when I bring these statistics and graphics to people, especially, you know, including teachers, that people are really surprised. You know, there's no question when we look at the demographics and we look at the statistics and we look at these images that the children's book world is skewed, and pretty significantly so. And so I think that mostly it's a lot of it is raising awareness for us to realize that there is a very clear problem that needs to be resolved and that we need to be all actively working to resolve this and making efforts to see those numbers be a lot more balanced.
Now, Sarah, I'm not sure who creates it, but there is a graphic that illustrates the data on diverse books. And one of the categories depicted is animal protagonists. And there are more books with animal protagonists than all other racial ethnic groups combined, aside from whites, of course. So why do so many children's books feature animal protagonists?
That's a really big question. And that definitely goes back, you know, several generations in children's books. But I think that, you know, one of the, that actually that animals was left out of the graphic when it was first put out. And so that was a big point of discussion. And so bringing animals in, inanimate, other and non-human trucks, that kind of thing, into the conversation, again, helped people focus, again, on the lack of diversity and sort of recognize that. In terms of why animals and non-human characters, I think that's been going on for a long time. I'm sure that, you know, allows children to, as they start to understand the world around them, they're connecting in various ways. But in conversations of diversity, that statistic really highlights how much work we need to do in terms of representation for children.
Yeah.
And I would love to add something to that if I could.
Yeah.
This is Mary. I thought a lot about this question because, you know, we can always say that anthropomorphism, you know, giving a human, an animal human characteristics or a truck or anything has been going on forever since the time of parables or fables, you know, old stories. And to me, there is a positive aspect to it that sometimes a non-human character for children can create a little bit of psychic distance. So if there's a character that's in danger or escaping or making mistakes, it creates almost like a little bit of a buffer for a child to enjoy and take in and process that story. But of course, the downside, like Sarah is saying, is that it can be to the detriment of stories that we want about diverse people. So it sort of can sometimes be seen as sidestepping or whitewashing, where you might have, you know, one of my favorite examples is from the LGBTQ community. There was a book several years ago called Uncle Bobby's Wedding about a little girl whose uncle was getting married to his partner. And the main struggle in the story was the little girl was worried that Uncle Bobby wouldn't have as much time for her anymore because he was her favorite uncle. And the characters in this book were guinea pigs. So they were talking, you know, with their little wedding suits on and the dress and the whole thing. And this book by Sarah Brannon was published in 2008. So it was recently reissued in 2020 with human characters. So one groom is white, one groom is black. There's some racial diversity in this story. There's some cultural, again, cultural sort of groundedness in terms of the setting of the story, the food that's being offered at the wedding. So there are all these really small signals that we get from just looking at illustrations that children get that I think is really valuable for us as the adults, as the teachers, as the parents to be thinking about.
Yeah. Mary, educators use the expression mirrors and windows when they talk about the importance of diverse voices in children's literature. Can you explain what that means?
Yeah, it's one of my favorite concepts in the world of children's books. It's from a wonderful woman named Dr. Rudine Sims Bishop, and she created this concept for us that children need both windows and mirrors in their books. So their mirror books are the ones that mirror their life, their reality, their family, their experience. Their window books are the books that offer them a look into another kind of family, another culture, another geographical location, another experience. So when I was thinking about what Jennifer was saying about the Native stories, though for Native children, those are really rich and wonderful mirror books. For children who are not at all familiar with Native culture or Native stories, or maybe they've been exposed to some harmful stereotypes, then those books would be an incredible, rich window into part of our population, for example, on Cape Cod, that they might not know very much about at all.
Yeah. Jennifer, as a young reader, did you notice that there weren't many characters in books like you?
I'm not sure if I thought about that very much growing up. I was fortunate to be raised by a Native American teacher. My mom was the first person in her family to go to college and came back and taught in her home community. So our home was filled with children's literature, lots of Native arts and authors. I even remember that my parents subscribed to Native American newspapers when I was a child. So we would read the Akwesasne Freedom Notes from, you know, upstate New York. And there's this whole network, you know, of authors and writers and artists in Indian country. And we really draw from each other and always have. And I wanted to add on to something that Mary said that I think is really fascinating to think about in terms of the mirrors and windows concept. For Native kids, a lot of times what we're teaching them in our classrooms is not just about their own culture, so about their Wampanoag community in Mashpee, but about their sister tribes in the Wampanoag Nation and their sister tribes in the Algonquian language family. So communities like the Passamaquoddy and Penobscot and Ojibwe, for example, who speak languages that are related and mutually intelligible in some cases. We've actually translated a whole series of Ojibwe language children's books into Wampanoag, and we were able to license the art from Ojibwe artists. And the reason that we do that is because these stories from other cultures, from other tribal cultures, there are almost 700 Native American tribes in the U.S., and all of those communities have such unique origin stories and family stories, and they may be completely different than Wampanoag or Lakota or Ojibwe or Cherokee, for example. So those are windows for children from Native communities into other Indigenous cultures, because our ancestors have lived here for many thousands of years. And so often our stories come from the land, and they come from animals and the plants and the ecosystems around us that inform this whole network and web of relationships. So that's another way to think about why stories might be told from an animal protagonist in Native communities. Mm. Animals are used to teach concepts, values. So for example, many Indigenous cultures have trickster figures. In some cultures, the trickster figure might be a rabbit, for example. There's a popular children's book called Rabbit's Big Bad Belly Ache, A Trickster Tale, and it's by a wonderful Choctaw author named Greg Rogers. And that's just one example, but there are so many amazing trickster stories, some that are just told orally, but many that have more recently been produced into children's literature. And they tell stories that, again, as Mary's saying, can be windows into the rich cultures here among Indigenous communities in the Americas, too.
We are talking about the importance of diversity in children's books this hour. Our phone number, if you'd like to join our conversation, 866-999-4626. That's 866-999-4626. Our email address is thepoint@capeandislands.org. We'll talk more after a quick break. You're listening to The Point. We are talking about the importance of diversity in children's books this hour with Mary Cronin, director of the Early Childhood Career Pathways Grant at Cape Cod Community College. She also teaches English and early childhood education at the college. Jennifer Weston, director of the Wampanoag Language Reclamation Project, and Sarah Hines, co-owner of the independent bookstore Eight Cousins in Falmouth. 866-999-4626 is our number. Our email address is thepoint@capeandislands.org. I already have a couple of emails. Anne in Eastham says, I want you to know about I Am Every Good Thing by Barnes and James. This is an upbeat, empowering picture book. It ecstatically conveys the idea that all Black boys are worthy to be loved. It's an awesome book. The illustrations are wonderful. The text is affirming. It mirrors Black boys today in the most positive way. This is a beautiful, wonderful book that is so joyful. Please tell people. Anne, we're telling people. Thanks for sharing that with us. And Heather writes, this program episode would be a wonderful resource for a Falmouth-based girl-led diversity reading program called Read for Equality. Read for Equality is led by 2 7th graders and is raising money to buy diverse books for local elementary schools. Thank you for this program, important topic. And Heather also shared a link to the their GoFundMe page, and we'll share that at our website, capeandislands.org. A few years ago, we had Alex Gino on the show to discuss their novel George, about a young transgender girl. And Amy, our producer, mentioned that she read George aloud when her son was 7. What struck her was that he didn't question why or how it happened or if it was okay that it happened. It just normalized being transgender, so much so that when a friend transitioned from Ellie to Elvis, it was like a non-event for him. So there was a time we thought books about certain topics like divorce, same-sex parents, transgender people were only for readers in similar situations. Sarah, talk about why these books are so important for everyone, even adults.
Well, children's books are so important for so many different reasons. And one of the things that they do is help children process the world around them. So from day one, they're helping children understand the world, and they can help children process emotions, they can help learn vocabulary, they can help learn language, numbers, science. There's so much going on in what children are learning from the books that they're reading in addition to the experiences they're having. And so, you know, when we talk about topics, this segues in exactly of trying to help children process the world, and books and narrative and stories help them do that. Helps them empathize with characters. And it helps them understand, again, either recognize emotions that they themselves have experienced, or whether they start to realize that there are people who experience things that are different from them. And so I can't think of how it's so important to have a range for kids, you know, to have a range of books that they can be reading widely, so that, again, they're either, whether they're understanding themselves or understanding more about the world, but to have as wide of a range as possible.
Mm-hmm. Anybody else want to add anything to that?
I can say something about that, because I'm thinking about my work at Cape Cod Community College. When I teach early childhood education, I'm teaching people who are preschool teachers, who are in the classroom. We talk a lot about the statistics that Sarah was mentioning from the Cooperative Children's Book Center. So if I, when I tell them that 71% of books in 2019 were either about white characters or about trucks and animals characters, they're shocked by that. So we talk about being so intentional in the way that we select books. If you're passive and you kind of take the easy road and you just pull a book off the shelf that's always been there, you're going to miss out on so much rich literature. and you're going to miss out on so many opportunities to bring the world to children. And I also love what Anne said from Eastham, which is a good reminder for all of us, for parents, for educators, that when we talk about diverse literature, we're not necessarily talking about stories of struggle and pain and victimhood. We're talking about joy. We're talking about a full, lovely experience featuring children who are children of color. And it's just really powerful for our young readers and our young students to see and experience those stories.
Right. We have India Winslow is joining us on the phone. She's a children's service librarian in Lexington. Hi, India.
Hi, how are you?
Good. So, and as a librarian, what are some of the challenges and opportunities that you have to find diverse books for children and young adults?
So honestly, children want to read just fun, exciting things. The greatest challenge is often the parents who are, you know, they just want to expose their children to the things that they read growing up. They may not know that there are new things. They may not have realized a lot of the things that they read growing up were not quite as diverse as the things that are being published today. But then there's also the struggle of a lot of the books that people want to publish, as was kind of just said, regarding featuring characters of various, you know, ethnic backgrounds, religious backgrounds, sexual orientations, gender, deal with those as issues. And that's kind of the harder thing. A lot of kids, they don't want something heavy. They want something that just shows kids being kids.
Yeah. And, you know, you bring up a really good point. I have a 5-year-old grandson, and we do a lot of reading and looking at some of those books that are much older. They've come a lot, like even Charlie Brown. I don't like to read the old Charlie Brown stories because they seem to be there's a lot of bullying that's and name calling going on there. Right. And the original Curious George, where the firemen arrest George. And it's like my grandson's like, they're so mean. So we're lucky that some of those books have been updated to be a little more positive. Right.
Yeah. Oh, my gosh. So that's actually a huge one. We have this saying where we say, you know, kill your darlings, where a lot of people, you know, you may have read a book like Little House on the Prairie, which has very negative depictions of Indigenous peoples. And you can love that book, but pair it with something else like The Birchbark House that will let children see a different side. So they're not only getting one side of a story. And so it's kind of like, be aware of the things that your child is intaking and be aware of the perspectives that they're seeing, because if they're only seeing one side, that's the worldview that will completely shape the way that they see things as well.
Yeah. So what are some of your favorite titles right now for kids or young adults?
Oh my gosh, so many. I would recommend for younger kids, a book that was really pivotal for me recently that just came out was a Bedtime Bonnet by Nancy Reed. I had never seen anyone as a Black woman. There's certain things I do with my hair at night that as a child I was embarrassed to do around my friends because they didn't do that. They just went straight to bed. They didn't put their hair in a bonnet. They didn't wrap it or do anything special. And this book doesn't make that an issue. It just normalizes it, and I love that. Another would be Harriet Gets Carried Away by Jesse Sima, another picture book that is just about a little girl named Harriet going on an adventure with her dad. She has two dads. That's just a natural thing that happens in the story. It's not making it an issue. It's just a thing that happens, and it's just a normal part of her life. So my big focus is books that make things that might not be familiar to certain readers normal.
Mm, yeah. So what phases, topics, perspectives would you like to see more of in children's and young adult books being published today?
I personally am just kind of holding out for people to write more fantasy books featuring characters of color, characters with different religious and gender backgrounds. There are a lot, but there's so many that deal with issues, including a recent book that came out, Maya and the Rising Dark, features a lot of West African mythology, and a reviewer said this would be great for people with an African-American interest, which is unfair because it would be great for anyone. You wouldn't say that about Harry Potter. You wouldn't say Harry Potter is great for someone who's interested in, English mythology and magic. You wouldn't say that. So anything that makes it more normal would be my thing.
Right. India Winslow is Children's Service Librarian in Lexington. Thanks for calling in this morning, India. Appreciate your thoughts this morning. We'd love to hear from you. 866-999-4626. That's 866-999-4626. Or you can shoot us an email, thepoint@capeandislands.org. Jennifer, do you remember the first time you did identify with a character in a book?
I do. It was a book by actually a non-Native author who's a wonderful artist named Paul Goebel. And he's written a lot of beautiful versions of Plains Indian stories. And there's one that I really like called The Girl Who Loved Wild Horses that just has amazing artistry throughout this story about, you know, a young indigenous child on the plains, which is originally where I'm from, and our relatives in the Horse Nation. And I just remember feeling very connected to that story because of the family names in our household and also the many relatives we have who still are very connected to horses and our culture.
Yeah. Mary, do you remember some of the first diverse voices and faces depicted in children's literature that you came across and if those instances stood out for you?
I do because growing up, I lived in a fourth floor apartment, a two-bedroom apartment, a family of five, in kind of a very changing, somewhat gritty neighborhood in the Bronx. So the first time I read stories about kids who lived in apartments, who didn't live in houses with yards and trees and swimming pools and things like that, and moms wore aprons, I just loved those books. And there was one called Striped Ice Cream, which featured a black family, and I think they had three kids in their family like I did, which now would be a very, very dated book. But back when I read it, I saw it was kind of a mirror book for me in some ways. And there's a few other picture books from my childhood that I've always tried to track down and can't find because they disappear after a period of time. But yes, I remember that feeling of finding a mirror and how powerful that was.
Yeah. Sarah, what were your thoughts on that?
Well, I think there was a book that I read when I was younger called Iggy's House that I learned a lot from that book. And I'm also thinking about how much some of the books that we read in school influenced me and how important it is for school curriculums to have diversity in literature from early through high school. And I think a lot of the books that I read in high school, I look back now and I think we really had I don't think it was perfect, but I think there was diversity in the curriculum and my school and how important that was for me as a reader. And so I think what I'm kind of hearing and highlighting, I want to highlight a little bit, is that the numbers are skewed. There's no question about that. But that doesn't mean that there aren't a lot of amazing books out there. And part of it is about discoverability. When I was hearing Jennifer talk a little while ago about the amazing range of books that she has been incorporating, and I think, you know, that's really one of the things that I like to focus on as a bookseller, is that we can help people find books that are there. So it's partially about what's being published, but it's also partially about discoverability and finding books that really that people really want and need.
Yeah, and I have to say, Sarah, you guys, as well as and most of your children librarians, I utilize, and before my grandson, when I was buying books for nieces and nephews, I could just walk in and say, okay, I have a niece who's 10, she's into this or that, and every book you guys recommend or the library recommends are always winners. So people should definitely take advantage because there's so many books out there. It can be really hard to narrow it down, and you know, so we need some expert advice sometimes.
And I see Kate, coming. You know, we're looking always ahead. So absolutely, we're seeing what's coming down the road. And there's a lot of really good books coming, you know, that are coming in and that we're seeing published now. Please use librarians and booksellers to help with that.
Yeah. Kate in Provincetown says, please tell your listeners about Enchanted Lion Books, an incredible publisher of diverse voices from around the world, diverse stories, peoples, colors, translations. Please check it out. That's a good one to know. All right. Let's see. We have Mary Bianco, librarian in Hyannis, giving us a call. Hi, Mary.
Hi. How are you?
Good. So, Mary, You bet. So, Mary, tell us a little bit about some of the challenges and opportunities that you have finding books for children and young adults.
Let's see. I think mostly it's opportunities because there's so many books out there now. Great publishers. Lee and Lowe is a great publisher of multicultural books. There's good websites. WeNeedDiverseBooks.org is one that really is pushing for diversity in books for libraries, schools, bookshops. It's fun to start looking. There's so many out there now. I know we probably need more, but
So do you have any
it's a
stories or
great
examples
deal.
of how of how you've seen books serve as windows or mirrors for some of your younger patrons?
Well, I was trying to think of that. I know that back when books first started coming out that had maybe African American children, Asian children, indigenous people, some people would walk in and say, "Oh, wow, there's a book that looks like me or looks like my child." And it was so exciting for them. I can't think of a, specific person, but it was, and the kids who come in from their with their classrooms, and it's nice to see books of holidays that didn't used to be around. And just it's just really fun to see that.
So what are some of your favorite titles right now for kids or young adults?
Let's see. I would say Picture Books, Last Stop on Market Street is a book by Matt De La Pena about a boy and his grandmother, an African American boy, and they're on a bus ride. And so they keep stopping at different bus stops, and he wants different things, and she and they're not things that they can buy, but she tries to make it fun anyway and talks about all the beauty. So the illustrations are great, and it's won a lot of awards. It's just a nice, fun, simple book. And then there's Julian is a Mermaid is a neat one. It's like a gender identity book about a boy who sees some women dressed up and he thinks they look like mermaids and they're wearing dresses and he goes back and tries to dress like them, but he thinks his grandmother is not going to like it, his abuela. And she ends up taking him to a vest festival where everybody's all dressed up and they get dressed up. So it's just nice and
So,
another
since,
diverse book.
yeah, I asked India this question and asked you the same one. What faces, topics, or perspectives would you like to see more of in children's and young adult books that are being published today?
Let's see. Maybe more diverse families. That is coming out a lot more now, where there could be two mothers, two fathers, single mother, grandparents, but just more of that, where it's just a part of the story and
Right.
seems
Where,
natural.
yeah, where the what defines family can be different for a lot of people. Yeah, exactly. Mary Bianco is at the Hyannis Public Library in Children's Services. Mary, thanks for calling in. We appreciate your time this morning.
Sure. You're welcome. Thanks for having me.
Eight six, you bet. 866-999-4626 is our number. That's 866-999-4626. Our email address, thepoint@capeandislands.org. We'll talk more after break. You're listening to The Point. We are talking about the importance of diversity in children's books with Mary Cronin, director of the Early Childhood Career Pathways Grant at Cape Cod Community College. She also teaches English and early childhood education. Jennifer Weston is the director of the Wampanoag Language Reclamation Project, and Sarah Hines is co-owner of the independent bookstore Eight Cousins in Falmouth. 866-999-4626 is our number. Our email address, thepoint@capeandislands.org. Mary, how can books help to start a dialogue between children and adults, particularly when it comes to topics that might be complex or difficult?
Well, the wonderful thing about children's books, which Sarah mentioned, one of the reasons why they're so important, is because they are so intentionally and carefully written and chosen and published. So by the time it reaches a parent's hand, a teacher's hand, a child's lap, it's been looked at and examined by so many people so that the language and the ideas are going to be presented in a way that are child-friendly and that are child-appropriate. So a lot of times parents will stumble with how to talk about something that they're not that comfortable with or familiar with, whether it's a child who is transgender or a culture they're not familiar with. And yet you open that book and it's all just explained and presented so beautifully. So it sort of helps us along the way in terms of those conversations. And then we just follow the child's questions and thoughts as we read together.
Yeah. So Mary, many people are not a single race or ethnicity or even, you know, biracial, but multiracial or multi-ethnic. Mm-hmm. Are we seeing characters in children's books that are more complex and nuanced?
Yeah, I thought it was interesting that going back to those statistics that we talked about, that there was a category for brown skin. So characters in children's books who don't have a stated race or ethnicity, they might be mixed race, but they are being presented in books. Of course, we want to see more of those, but that that accounted for almost 10% of books in those 2019 statistics. So I thought that was really wonderful. And I also just wanted to pass on a conversation that I had this summer with my students at Cape Cod Community College. I was teaching a course called Poetry in the Early Childhood Classroom, and we were talking about the importance of nursery rhymes.
Oh, Mary, I think Mary's breaking up a little bit there.
Yeah, I mean, I hope so. So we talked about the sort of white default of nursery rhymes, and one of the favorite books that we really examined closely is called The Neighborhood Mother Goose by Nina Cruz, and it has all the most familiar nursery rhymes. But all the characters are children of color, mainly black children, but other races and skin tones as well. And it just gives us all those familiar rhymes, but a whole new way of looking at them.
Yeah. So the history of diverse people in our country is not just a story of civil rights or indigenous rights. It's stories of culture, arts, family, migration, career paths. And Jennifer, you touched on this. So how can both fiction and nonfiction broaden our understanding of diverse people in this country?
So I think these are just really important ways to broaden the narrative when we think about what it means to be a citizen in our tribal nation or a citizen in our state or commonwealth, a citizen in our nation. One of my favorite books that we shared with tribal kids over the summer, we weren't able to convene for our annual summer camp, so we put together kits and tote bags and we wanted to focus on literacy. So we included Wampanoag language books from our popular teachers and illustrators. But we also found this really beautiful new book from a Seminole author named Kevin Noble Mylard. And he is, this is his first book actually, but it's called Fry Bread. And it's really a beautiful Native American family story, but it's meant to apply coast to coast. And I just want to read you a couple of lines from the book.
Oh, sure. Yeah.
To understand, to think about what you're talking about, you know, fact and fiction. You know, this is a book that's really delving into some deep issues in our nation, but it's doing so in a way that's visually accessible and appealing and welcoming to families of all backgrounds. So it's called Fry Bread, a Native American Family Story. And part of the opening is Fry Bread is nation. It is shared by many from coast to coast and beyond. Fry bread is food. It is warm and delicious, piled high on a plate. Fry bread is time. It brings families together for meals and new memories. And then it goes back to the refrain, fry bread is nation. Abenaki, Apache, Arapaho, Ojibwe, Onondaga, Oglala Sioux, Narragansett, Navajo, Nipmuc, Seminole, Shoshone, Sac and Fox, hundreds and hundreds of tribes. Fry bread is everything. Round, flat, small, large, north, south, east, west, brown, yellow, black, white, familiar and foreign, old and new, we come together. And that's just one of the books that I really want to recommend because it's accessible to anybody. It was a finalist for the Caldecott. It's won a lot of awards. It actually won a Caldecott honor. But it's just something that we found our students were very responsive to because it reflects what a lot of our tribal families look like today. And it welcomes others who may not have an Indigenous background to understand the history of this one little common bit of food history that tribes share across the U.S. and that maybe many other people have experienced too if they've ever gone to a powwow on the Cape or elsewhere in our region.
Yeah. Sarah, are we seeing books being published that try to change the historical narrative of diversity?
I think that what we're seeing is a reminder that that our history is more diverse than we have been seeing in some of the books. So we're seeing historical fiction highlighting people who may have been written out of the narrative in books that were published over the last couple of decades. And that's been a good reminder to people reading that it's not as if this, you know, that this isn't new. This diversity is not a new part of our American history, but it's been infused in American history for a long time now. So I do appreciate that we're seeing more historical fiction. And also with the fantasy, you know, somebody mentioned earlier wanting to see more fantasy and science fiction, and recognizing that fantasy and science fiction is often a reflection of culture, but we are seeing more and more sort of speculative and futuristic fiction, which has been really great.
Yeah. So what are we hearing from authors? Is there more acceptance from the publishing world around having diverse lead characters?
There is a lot of conversation in the publishing world and a lot of dialogue as people try to figure out the nuances. We talk about windows and mirrors a lot in publishing, as we've gone over, but we also talk about things like own voices and representation and the idea that people of, you know, the importance of having, of not writing harmful texts, but writing, you know, with good research, whether it's personal experience or research, but that understanding personal experience is a very vital part of literature. We talk a lot about expertise readers, engaging and having a lot of wide-ranging readers before a book is published. So I think that there's still quite a few books that do make it through that can have problematic content, but I think that the dialogue has increased pretty significantly in the last few years about really setting high standards for children's books and making sure that we are putting out the best books that we're putting out the best books that we can, and that we are recommending the best books that we can to really create an amazing reading experience for kids.
Yeah. There are books that features diverse protagonists, but race is not center stage in the plot. Mary, can you talk about the importance of normalizing diversity in books for children and young adults?
Yeah, I think that it's just a matter of, I think a lot of parents of color talk about this, that they want books about children of color who are not in a struggle, who are not in a context of civil rights or slavery or Reconstruction or any of those sort of historical struggles, but simply going through the joyful and sometimes challenging parts of just being a child. And every child reader deserves those stories. And there's an interesting hashtag that I sometimes see on social media, Black Girl Joy, Black Boy Joy. And it emphasizes that we need stories that are starring children of color that are simply about going to school,
right,
and having a new sibling, and walking through a neighborhood, making a friend, all those very typical milestones of childhood.
Yeah. Let's talk to Joanne, who's giving us a call from Mashpee. Hi, Joanne.
Hi. I'm so happy to hear this discussion today. I turned in late, but I am a former teacher, a preschool teacher in Mashpee, and I am just so thrilled in the past 2 years to see how many more authors of color are being recognized, their books are being published. That diversity is so important. And I just want to also mention that I believe that white children need these books just as importantly for that idea of the windows looking out onto the world, and I feel it's so important for white children to have that view of the world, and not a narrow view but a wider view. So thanks for this wonderful discussion.
Yeah. Joanne, thanks for calling in. Yes, and that is a point I think we've been trying to make this hour for sure. And just looking at the independent publishers are more apt to publish the diverse books than the larger publishing houses. So Mary, how can booksellers, school systems, and librarians push the publishing world for more diversity?
That might be a better question for Sarah, but I'll just...
I was going to ask her next, but yeah.
I think just as consumers, as purchasers, to say what we want, what we are looking for, what we want more of, creating the market. I know that, you know, several years ago there was a conversation about, you know, will boys read books that are starring girl characters? So in a similar vein, you know, are white parents and educators buying books that feature children of color in an intentional way? Because the more we do that, the more we create a demand. And I bet Sarah has more to add on that.
Yeah. Sarah?
Well, that absolutely. You know, we, as booksellers, we kind of sit between two, both people coming in and asking. And, you know, we're a small independent bookstore. So when people ask for things, we take notice, and that's always, you know, we're paying attention to what people are asking for. On the other side, we meet with a lot of publisher reps, and we're, you know, always saying, here's what we'd like to see. And so, you know, I certainly, independent publishers absolutely have been publishing a lot of diversity for years. We're seeing imprints being picked up or started in some of the larger publishing houses, which is really nice, but it's... I'm always really excited when people come in and ask and say, I'm looking for, that gives, you know, if we don't have it, it gives us an opportunity to go find it. And if it doesn't exist, it gives me an opportunity to go back to our reps in the publishing industry and say, hey, you know, I was looking for this and it doesn't exist. And, you know, that information gets through the publishing world. And so I think just the more that people are asking and buying, but also checking out from the library. There's always a question about that. But buying books and checking books out from the library have huge influence. It tells the publishing industry what people are interested in reading and where their interests lie. So, yeah. You know, there's a lot of influence. What teachers are teaching in their classrooms, has a huge influence as well. So everybody really can make, have an impact and, you know, so I think that's one of the most exciting things about publishing is that, you know, it is flexible. It does change. You know, it may not change quite as quickly as we might want sometimes, but it can be responsive. And so making, you know, demanding things and asking for things will influence the books that come out over the next few years.
Yeah. And Jennifer, I was really happy to hear that you have this connection with, you know, other tribes or nations across the country that you can share all of these stories. But I wonder how active is the Indigenous community in pushing for more books about Indigenous people in the, you know, in the mainstream?
There's a lot of really incredible work happening. There's increasingly scholars who work in Native and Indigenous studies who are also reaching out into the children's market. So one example is an amazing Ojibwe professor named Brenda Child, who has done just incredible work over the past 40 years at the University of Minnesota. They have the oldest American Indian and Indigenous Studies program at the university level in the U.S. And she recently authored a children's book called Bow Wow Powwow that we shared with our youth over the summer. And it's a story about a little girl hanging out with her grandpa, going to a powwow and, you know, learning about all the traditions around that kind of social gathering. And she falls asleep and she has a dream about her puppies and all of the dogs in her neighborhood having their own powwow. But it's just this really cool story that you wouldn't expect to come from this really esteemed university professor. There's also this great blog called American Indians and Children's Literature that is really a national resource for folks. We always refer people to that when they're looking for reading lists.
Yeah, that's and good to know. We have to leave it there, I'm afraid. We're out of time. Mary Cronin, Jennifer Weston, and Sarah Hines, thanks so much for being with us. We'll post links with more information about diversity in children's books at our website, capeandislands.org. Again, thanks so much. I'm Mindy Todd. Thank you for listening.
The Point is produced by Amy Vince. The executive producer is Mindy Todd. Production assistance from Jenny Junker and Dan Tridle. Theme music by Benjamin Verdery and William Coulter.